Oh, and we're recording. Numbers moving. It's great. Roller Out the Barrel Vintage Baseball Podcast, talking to vintage baseball players, coast to coast, water to water. I don't know if any of you people listening to this realize that I made a list, and that list is the seven best historical baseball podcasts of 2022. I don't know who did the list, but lists are important. We know this. Making a list is important, and being on a list is important. If you were to do your top 10 things, make a list. Both of those two are going to show up on it. And we are on a list. We're number seven. We're really important. Anyway, this week's episode, we're going out to East Coast baseball. We're going to learn everything there is about the Essex baseball organization. And with us, recording, is Chris Sheehy. Chris, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I feel like we've done this before.
Yeah, maybe a minute ago, yeah.
And that's all it was. It was just a minute. But everything is working properly now.
Perfect.
Thanks for joining me. We were talking just a second ago about your great accent, but it only comes up when you really say a word that's important to you. Do you notice this?
There's definitely certain words I think that act out a little bit more than normal. But.
Let me ask you this, Chris. You ever listen to any of my podcast episodes?
I've listened to a couple of them.
Out of the two you've listened to, which is your favorite?
Let me think. Oh, I was like Jake and Chuck, I think. Those are definitely the two. And probably Ian. Ian was on there, right?
Wow, those are old school, back in the archives. I think Chuck was my second interview.
I think those are the ones I've definitely listened to. I've been meaning to listen to them. I just haven't gotten to it.
That's all right. I forgive you. It's a running joke on the show that everybody I interview has never listened to the show.
Well, at least I've listened to a
couple. You've listened to a couple episodes. Yay. But anyway, this is actually going to go out to quite a few people. So I just want to make you as nervous as possible.
I'm super nervous.
Great. Great. Chris, I have no idea who you are. We've never had any interaction of any kind. And I don't even know how I got your name, to tell you the truth. But your name's on my list. Somebody out in vintage baseball land requested you be interviewed. So here it is to that person. You're welcome.
Well, whoever that was, thank you.
So we're going to find out about you and everything baseball and non-baseball related. We're going to end with your stupid love of the New England Patriots. And we're going to start... we're going to end with giving you the old pepper. I don't know if you remember that segment from the two episodes you listened to, Chris.
I did.
Holy shit. All right. So, Chris, we're going to start off because we were talking and you got a start in vintage baseball at an early age of 15. And so you must not have much of a baseball story before 15. So let's start off. Chris, with your very earliest memories of baseball.
I think pretty much since I was born, I think I've always had a bat and ball in my hand or something like that, always tossing the ball, trying to hit it, asking my mom or dad to pitch to me and hit me pop-ups or whatever. And I don't know. I just think I've always loved baseball. My dad loved baseball. My mom played softball when she was younger. It was kind of always the sport I just gravitated to. I always played it throughout Little League, T-ball, all that stuff, all the way up through high school. It's the sport that I think I liked the most, and I was the best at that sport, so I wanted to play that more.
Let's go back to you in Little League. What was the sponsor of your Little League team when you were your last sponsor in Little League?
I don't remember at all.
Really, you're not that old, Chris. How old are you?
I'm 35. 35. I'll be 36 next month.
No, that's not old enough. Who is your sponsor in the league?
I really don't know. It was a sponsor. Like, I don't even know if we really had, like, I don't know how it went back then. It might have said it on the back of our shirts, but I don't remember at all.
What is your most vivid memory of a play that happened in a Little League game?
Oh, wow. I threw a couple no-hitters when I was like 12. I do remember that.
When you throw a no-hitter as a 12-year-old, do the other 12-year-olds on the field realize how important it is, or is it just kind of a thing?
I don't think they realized how it was. They just wanted to get hit, probably. I don't think I even really realized until somebody told me that after the game.
The best hit you ever got in the Little League?
Best hit. I was very small, so I wish I could say I had a home run. Probably would have to be in the park home run, like a Little League in the park home run.
You weren't quite working out in your garage yet, so you were just a small guy.
Small, scrawny, little kid. I wasn't hitting it out the park just yet.
So after Little League, do you go up in the higher age group of baseball?
Yeah, so like, through Little League and everything, I would play in the summer as I got older, play that league, play in the summer. I went to high school, played all 4 years. At that point, like, vintage kind of starts after, like, my freshman year of high school. My brother was working at Merrimack College in the library, and his boss said, "You should try this out," because her boyfriend at the time was starting a vintage baseball team in Danvers. And so he went, tried it out. I went to like the next game they had, and they were short some people. So I decided to, they asked me to play, and I just fell in love with it. After that, and I would always tag along with him and play, and then I would still play my summer league or high school games, but I always wanted to play that too because it was so much different and a lot more fun to an extent.
Did your high school coach know you were playing vintage baseball?
I think he knew senior year. Because after one of the practices, I drove right down to Rhode Island to play in the game. I don't think he was too happy about it, but wasn't much you could do.
So you're playing, this is something that we don't run across very often, but you're playing high school baseball and vintage baseball at the same time. Two completely different games of the same game. Are you playing the same position in both of them? What are your mentalities for, what are the differences in your mentalities for both of these at the same time?
Well, luckily there wasn't a ton of overlap for like my high school season. But in vintage, I play shortstop. In high school, I was playing second. So there's not a ton of differences there. My mentality, I mean, for high school, obviously we wanted to win the states and stuff. For vintage at that time, I was just having fun. Because at that point, it was just really just like, let's just travel to here, there, and just have some fun.
And what was what was that first vintage baseball team that you were a part of?
The Essex Baseball Club.
Oh, the Essex Club?
Yeah, the Essex Baseball Club. That's the origin of like our league now. When we started in 2001, it was just the Essex Baseball Club, and we, you know, played some games around the area. 2002, kind of the same thing. 2003, 2004, I think we started our second team, the Lynn Live Oaks, so we could play someone a little more frequently. along with the Melrose Pond Fielders that were around at the time. That's when we started branching out and traveling more to Rhode Island or Connecticut.
So for everybody listening right now, where is the Essex Baseball Organization located?
Newbury, Massachusetts.
Newbury, Massachusetts. So, isn't that where John Cena's from? I'm not going to make a joke until later, but isn't that where John Cena's from?
He's from the area. I do know that. I don't know if it's Newbury or he's from the area for sure.
All right, I'm going to have my research department look it up. Oh, you can't see it? Oh, never mind.
That was the start. We started in Danvers, Massachusetts. That's where Essex started. And then as we kind of grew the two teams and kept growing and traveling around and seeing all the different places around our area, we were approached by the field in Newbury, Spencer Pierce Little Farm, to play a couple games. And we kind of fell in love with that place. And that was 10, 12 years ago. We made that officially our home field for the league. And we kind of kept expanding into the four teams that we now have. But yeah, we did do traveling for a little while. And we just kind of wanted a home base where people were having families, and our group of core guys were getting into that type of part of their life where it was easier to have a central home than have to travel every weekend and be away from everybody. So that's kind of where we wanted to gravitate towards. So that's kind of how we evolved from one.
You kind of have a league over there of four teams, not a league, so to speak, but like a four team family over there.
Yeah, it is a league. We play each other like every other week or whatever, and we have a championship, and we play for different cups throughout the year. So it is technically a league, I guess, but yeah, we're one big group that if we do want to travel somewhere, you can pull from whoever in the league. Like, we've been to the Ohio Cup. We've gone to Chicago. We've gone to a couple different places that we pull from the league and maybe shut down for a week just so we can do that travel date.
Yeah, so it looks like on this year's schedule, you're actually heading out to Wisconsin for the Menominee Festival. And you're also going to the Ohio Cup again.
Yeah. One of the other captains of the league is kind of in charge of all that. So he'll be pulling from whoever he wants to ask, and hopefully we can send a couple good teams out there.
So the four clubs in the league are Essex, the Lynn Live Oaks. Would that be the Newburyport Clam Diggers?
Yeah, so the Essex team is like our travel team.
Okay.
It's the Lowell Baseball Nine, which is my team, okay, the Lynn Live, the Newburyport Clam Diggers, and the Portsmouth Rockinghams.
Okay. And you guys all play at the same field?
Yep.
Wow, that's pretty convenient. Yeah. Actually.
And we have a beer truck at most of our games.
A what?
A beer truck. Ipswich Ale is one of our sponsors, and they typically bring a truck, and we get to drink for free. The fans have to pay, but it's a nice little perk of playing.
So the Ipswich Brewery, where did I see this? I swear I saw this on your schedule somewhere, but I don't see it. Oh yeah, because there it is. There's an Ipswich Ale Harvest Fest triple header.
Yeah, that's one of the cups we play for. So, like, there's a couple different random events that the farm hosts and stuff like that, where we'll do a triple header and we'll, two teams will play, the two winners play for the cup. Keeps everybody interested and involved, and it's a fun, like this Switch Ale is one of my favorite events, because in the past it's been like hundreds and hundreds of people. It's like a beer festival, and then you add us playing and people drinking and all that, and like as the day goes, you can almost feel the field just shrinking because of the amount of people that are closing in on the field. Uh-huh. So it's a lot of fun.
So when the beer truck is there, let's just talk about the beer truck. I am a beer delivery guy, so I'm very interested about what we're about to talk about. I see. Is it this beautiful red and white truck that pulls up with all the taps off the side?
Yep. It's a beautiful sight whenever we see it showing up. We love it.
I can't see what the full vehicle looks like, but I can see there's at least 15. I want to say 15 taps coming out of that. And every single one of those, I assume that they're brewing. Is that correct?
Well, at the Ipswich Fall Fest, most of those are full. When it's just us playing on a random Sunday in July, there'll be like one or two taps on.
Oh.
There's still plenty of beer to enjoy.
Okay, here's your chance to sell everybody on an Ipswich, your sponsor's ale. What's your favorite flavor?
They make a couple great IPAs. The 1620 is really good. They have a pale ale that I can't remember the name of. But there's a couple, and if you like some stouts in the fall, they bring out some of those sometimes, so. They give a nice select variety of beers that they bring out for us. And especially at that Ipswich Fall Fest, if they're doing it like they usually do this year, then it will be nice and big like it always is.
Yeah, so I'm looking at food. I'm looking at the whole nine yards. How far away is their main location located from your field?
Their brewery is maybe 20 minutes away.
Do you guys go there after games or for any?
Sometimes we go. There's a couple other breweries there closer to our field that are just easier, like logistically, to get to. And easier for me personally to get home from. Like Ipswich, for me to get home, I have to go a lot of back roads and different things. And if I go to the other breweries, I can just hop on the highway and I'll be home in 20 minutes. So those are a little more convenient. But our sponsor is amazing and they do a great job. And they have for the past 12 plus years that they've been our sponsor.
And that's beautiful. And did I hear you say that the players get to drink for free?
Yes, we do. Yep.
So are there rules? Do you guys put like a rule on, hey, let's not get drunk? Like there's a story. I don't know a story, but I'm telling you there's a story, Chris, of a player getting wasted out of his mind by the time the play was over. And you're going to tell me that story right now.
There's been a few times we just tell people to knock it off. But, I mean, for me personally, I don't have a beer until all the games are done for me. I don't like the feeling of running around with beer sloshing around in my stomach and I haven't probably eaten that much that day. So I'd rather wait till the end of the games. Some guys like to have, you know, like that's their water. That's their Gatorade for the day.
Has there been a guy do a face plant on the way to first base because he was wasted?
Yes.
We do this thing at the Frankenmuth Festival. We have a captain's match, And we found, Paul Hunkley, a local historian, actually found where beer was served at third base during a certain match. So when we have our captain's match, which is a representative from every team that's going to be in the festival over the weekend, play, we have beer at third base. And it's funny because everybody who gets to third base will have a beer. But when it gets time, when it gets to game time, you're looking at the seventh inning and it's a close game, no one will drink the beer. They're all about winning the game then. It was started out fun and we're having a good time and blah, blah, blah. And then it turns into, I don't have time for that. I'm trying to win a game.
Makes sense. Maybe I'll bring that up to the captains. We can try that sometime. I'll see how it goes.
But beer and baseball, sign me up. tell me how you took to vintage baseball, because you had played three-ish years of high school and all your little league before that. How are you finding the style of play that you had to adapt to in vintage?
I thought it was like just interesting. One of the things that I like so much about this style of baseball is you can see the evolution of everything. Why would they change this rule? Why would they change the bounce rule? Because, you know, people got a great hit and someone caught on the bounce. Or why would you change this? Why would you change that? I think one thing that really made me fall in love with this was a book I read by Darryl Brock, If I Never Get Back. It's about the 1869 Red Stockings, where this guy travels back in time and is part of the 1869 Red Stockings, but it's a good historical showing of baseball at that time and just like all the dynamics. But I think also part of it, I think growing up, I never really got to hang out with my brother as far as like baseball wise. We were always too far apart because he's 4.5 years older than me. So now like, oh, I get to hang out and play baseball with my brother. Like, oh, that's pretty sweet. But I just fell in love with this style, like the uniforms, the bats, the different ball, the weird rules at times. It was just so different from regular baseball, where there's a little more strategy at times with vintage baseball. Like, oh, I can't hit the ball really deep because they'll just catch on the bounce. I have to hit it the other way or do this or that. There's a lot more thinking, I felt like, where modern baseball at times, you just get up and swing the bat. You don't have to think as much.
Yeah, baseball. No, it makes perfect sense. Baseball did start out as a chess game, and some people think that still exists, and it certainly doesn't to that extent. It's still a thinking man's sport to some level, but they don't play like that anymore. They are just up mashing, you know, things like sacrifice bunts and giving yourself up. Hitting it to the right side to get the guy to third, and all that stuff doesn't exist in baseball anymore, it seems like.
No, not really. Just go up, try to hit a home run, and if not, strike out.
Yeah, so sitting through a baseball game can be a little brutal nowadays. Do you go to Fenway very often?
Every now and then, maybe once a year, if that. It's a little too expensive at this point to go. I'd rather go to like a minor league game in Worcester at the Woo Sox, or even go to Manchester, New Hampshire and watch the Manchester Fisher Cats, the double A affiliate of the Blue Jays, and just cheaper, and you get to still watch a baseball game and not spend hundreds of dollars just to watch a game, have a drink, have a hot dog.
And every play is important to those guys.
Yeah, and it's more entertaining. I mean, you don't know who those guys are, so I'd rather watch a major league game on TV than actually have to sit there and watch 3.5 hours of guys adjusting their batting gloves.
What was the biggest transition for you? Was it the no glove? Was it the throwing to somebody with no glove? Was it having to change the way you swing to accomplish what you want to do? What'd you have the biggest problem with?
I think I probably initially was throwing to someone without a glove, but not like, oh, should I throw this hard or like ease up on it because he was not wearing a glove. I think that was probably the craziest transition to it because, I mean, in high school, a lot of times we'll work on ground balls without gloves anyway. So that's not a crazy thing to switch to. Catching like a line drive or a pop up without a glove is a little different. But I would say probably throwing to someone. But at that time, we had a guy who was just like humming at me and I'll catch it. So that was easier. But hitting, I even in high school, I wasn't very big. So I was just still a single type of guy. So that transitioned into vintage as well.
You're around, you're 35 years old, Chris?
Yep.
If you could go back to 15-year-old Chris and you could say, don't practice this as much, it's not going to be that important, but practice this more, what would those two things be?
It's a tough one.
Let's start with something that you thought at 15 was going to be really important to be part of your game, and it turned out you didn't need to put any time into that. Or as much time, I should say.
Well, 15, I thought I was going to pitch for varsity and stuff like that. And I spent a lot of time doing that, and I wasn't good enough. So I guess I would take some of the pitching back and just focus on getting better at hitting or getting bigger at that time.
Oh, because what was your height and weight in high school?
I think I weighed in like my senior year, like 5'11", but 125 pounds.
Oh, okay. So I see what's going on there.
So I try to gain weight and focus on hitting, I guess, would be the things that I'd try to improve when I was 15.
So you probably didn't play football, but did you play basketball?
No, I did play football my freshman year. So I guess minus, 15, 20 pounds, maybe a couple inches. That wasn't very intimidating. So it only lasted a year football.
Hey, the Essex Club, you said that's your travel club?
Yeah, if we travel somewhere, we'll probably call ourselves the Essex Baseball Club. Back when we traveled around to Bethpage, Cooperstown, all the places that we went to travel, we were always the Essex Baseball Club. That's what we started with. And that we just kind of took that away from the league so that could be our travel team. Rather than like, oh, we'll just, the Lynn Live Oaks are going to Monotony. And then, but we're one big umbrella. But the Essex Club is our fifth team, but travel team.
And that's the Essex Club has been around for 20 years. And when one form or another, what was your favorite year of the Essex Club?
My favorite year. They've all been pretty good. I've been able to travel a lot of places. It has been nice. But I think the first couple of years we started at Spencer Pierce Little Farm, when we bring more teams in to play, and then we travel down. I remember like the Atlantics came up. Like we traveled down there. A couple other teams came up. So maybe like 2008, 2009. Some okay. Pretty funny. And for a while, we actually played overhand as well,
uh-huh,
as the Boston Bean Eaters. and not the Essex Club. We were the Boston Bean Eaters. We traveled to like Providence to play the Game Hens or the Providence Grays as well. Played in Pittsfield. We've done like all the eras of vintage baseball at some point. But I definitely like the 60s, 65 probably the best. Or 64, sorry.
64, that's when you're playing on the mound. Do you guys still play with the ball being live at all times?
Yeah, 64 is the style we play at the farm. It's, to me, because you don't have to be the best baseball player. This is the other thing I think I like about vintage baseball is, like, you could play throughout high school, college, and be a good vintage player. You could have played just Little League maybe a little bit when you were, like, 13 or 14 and still be an okay vintage baseball player because some of the rules help in a
Some of the rules make it, I don't want to say easier, but I guess that's kind of what I mean. It's easier to be able to play catching everything off a bounce. I mean,
if you off a bounce, it's a little easier than, everything has to be on the fly, which can be difficult at times. So it kind of is a nice little equalizer in some aspects. Like if you're a good hitter, you're a good hitter either way. If you aren't, you still might get a hit because of the weird rules. You have to throw to somebody without gloves too. So, I mean, there's so many different things. This is why I like this style so much.
So one of the things that we encounter in the Midwest when you're going between styles, because we have both fly and bound over here, is the more skilled hitters in the fly game have a hard time sometimes adjusting to the bound game because they're used to just going up there and trying to crush it. And and you can't just do that in a bound match. You have to place it.
Yeah.
Because you're an easy out. If you try to burn the left fielder, and you do, but any left fielder worth his salt is going to get that on a bounce.
Yeah, that's what I've been running into. The left fielder and center fielder are playing me pretty deep now, and I got to try to just hit a line drive and not try to tee off. And like, oh, look how far I hit that one. And then they catch it, and like, oh, it's, cool, I'm still out.
But it's hard for you to get up there and be like, all right, you're not going to swing your hardest. It's hard to talk yourself into that, isn't it?
It is. I just got to remember to try to hit it on a line, not try to, you know, hit it over the green monster.
Oh, my God, the green monster in vintage would really help some people. No wonder why that thing got invented.
Well, at our home field in right in the right field and the center field during the summer, they have corn that grows throughout the summer. So when it gets a little higher and the ball gets harder to see, I usually start flicking at the right field as much as possible, and hopefully they lose track of the ball. I just keep running around.
Chris, what's your vintage baseball nickname?
Monkey.
All right, what's the story?
So what? This goes back even further than vintage. I think I was like 10 or 11. My brother had some friends over, and I just happened to be hopping on a bed or something like that. And maybe I had like a resemblance of a monkey when I was younger. So they called me Monkey, and since I was 10 or 11, that name has stuck. Kids love it, though, when, like, oh, what's your nickname? Or like, people yell Monkey. Like, I'm a fan favorite because, like, that nickname. Like, oh, Monkey. What?
Yeah, yeah. There are no other monkeys in vintage baseball. Have you ever come across one?
No. If I do, I think they owe me a royalty because that would be mine. 20 plus years. 25 plus years.
Yeah, but you know what? There is a lot of schoolboys. Yeah. Because there's so many teachers. There's a lot of schoolboys. What's another name that you see a lot? Oh, kid is one I see a lot of.
Fun. I don't mean to call my brother out, but Cappy.
Cappy. Some form of captain.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cap or any of that. Yeah.
Lefty, something like that. I've seen a bunch of those.
Yeah, or getting named after animals. We do that a lot, too. No monkeys, though. We got grizzlies. We got silverbacks. We got all kinds of stuff like that, but no monkeys. Huh. Somebody's going to take this.
Part of the primate family, I guess. Yeah.
So looking at your, before we get on to more about you personally, I got your schedule right here. I did have it. There it is. I wanted to talk about a couple of these events on your things. You have a Fiber Revival triple header in August. What is the Fiber Revival?
That's an event that the farm that we play at always does. It's really just people that like to build stuff with yarn and stuff like that. So we've built a little cup based off of that event where we play the triple header, same format as the Ipswich Ale Cup, but a lot of women like to come and show off their knitting and yarn expertise. I don't pay that much attention to that, so I'm not a vast knowledge of that aspect of it. I just play the baseball game. And
and then your championship game is called the Jan's Pitch Championship. Why is it referred to Jan's Pitch?
Well, it's named after, it's in honor of my mother. Back in 2013, when she passed away, we decided to do a fundraiser in her honor. And at that time, we were doing it after the season had ended, and we were raising money for breast cancer and raising money for and our donations for the school she worked at. A few years went by, we realized, like, oh, a lot of the guys in the league, the season ended, they don't really want to play another game. It's a little colder, it's later in October, whatever. So we decided to switch it to our championship game. And now all the money we raise and all the art supplies that we are able to collect from that event, we give to the Boston Children's Hospital, which I think makes a little bit more difference than what we were giving it to. It's definitely impactful for the kids that are there. And I think my mom would want that anyway. So that's why we made that shift. But it's our championship, and it's a special day for everybody.
Well, it's fantastic what you guys are doing for the Children's Hospital. Giving what you can, always probably gets you guys some attention for doing that, doesn't it?
We don't make a big deal of it. We kind of just try to, you know, raise as much money as we can and ask people that can donate any art supplies and stuff like that, just to, and we just give it to the hospital, and we don't really want too much publicity on it. It's just more of a...
Do you get any of the kids being able to come down and watch the baseball games?
No, we haven't really explored that route yet, but maybe we could try to see if any of them could. That'd be pretty awesome though.
Yeah, I mean, they're in the hospital for a reason, so I guess odds would be long that could happen, but you never know.
Yeah.
How that could be. Hey, Chris, tell me about your workout regimen in your garage. If you're going to go in there and you're just going to do a normal Chris set routine for the day, what are you doing?
Well, I kind of break it up between my biceps, triceps, my back and my shoulders, and chest later, and then maybe I'll sprinkle some legs in every now and then, but kind of depends on what exercise group I'm doing. Nothing too crazy. I don't want to get too big. But.
Is your favorite movie scene ever the handshake between Arnold and Apollo Creed? I can't, for the life of me, Carl Weathers. Arnold Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers, the handshake in Predator where their biceps are all bulging. Is that your favorite movie scene of all time?
It's a good one. But the Pain and Gain with The Rock and Mark Wahlberg is a kind of funny, stupid movie about like working out. So it's also kind of funny. Have you ever seen that movie?
I have not seen it yet. I will see it when it's free, when I come across it when it's free. But
free somewhere on something, I'm sure.
Yeah, it has been a little while since that's been out. So you know what? I haven't heard Pain and Gain in so many years at this point. I haven't even thought about it. It hasn't even popped up in my life. Sorry. You guys love the Mark Wahlberg over there. What's your favorite Mark Wahlberg movie?
Oof. Ted.
Ted. That's a good one. I didn't like Ted 2. But Ted was really good. My favorite Wahlberg is got to be The Other Guys. I thought he was great in The Other Guys.
That's a great one. With Will Ferrell. I like that one.
I thought, because a lot of people say that, you know, Mark Wahlberg plays the same character in all the movies, and I thought he was a little different in that one.
Yeah, he does have as well, a lot.
So you're a guy that's a homebody like me, so I can appreciate it. You watch a lot of the streaming. So you watch Netflix, Hulu, and Disney Plus. Are you watching currently any series that requires many episodes of commitment?
On Netflix, I just started the new Vikings Valhalla. I'm only like an episode in, so I'm not that too far into it, but it seems pretty interesting. On Hulu, I've been watching Pam and Tommy.
I haven't watched it yet because I lived it. That was in my time era.
That was right around the time where I'd want to be watching or trying to check out a movie like that, I guess.
Yeah, I love it when one of these streaming things comes out with a documentary type movie like this. Pam and Tommy's more of a movie, but then everybody else comes out with a documentary about it, about Pam and Tommy. You know, I was like, it wasn't that interesting. There's not a lot of story to tell. You can make one thing. That'll be good. No.
Yeah, just make the show and just watch the show. It's entertaining.
We don't need to have 1,000 interviews about the same thing happening. Like maids. Oh, I went to the hotel room and the Tommy was leaving. Nobody cares. Everybody knows what happened. Disney Plus. You mentioned you're a Marvel guy. Let me ask you this. Loki or WandaVision, your preference?
Loki. I thought Loki was a little bit better. WandaVision, the first three or four episodes, I didn't really understand what was happening. Where at least Loki, you kind of had a storyline that was confusing at times, but you were still like, kind of straightforward with it more than WandaVision. Thought they were both great though, but I'd have to go with Loki on that one.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed Loki a lot more, even though I have the hots for Elizabeth Olsen. I don't know what to tell you. I think
I can't disagree on that.
I find her hot, and I find her two sisters hideous, and I don't know why they all look the same. Explain it to me, Chris.
That's quite the conundrum. I don't know.
I don't know why, and it will bother me until the end of time. So your favorite Marvel movie out of all of that, the whole building process from Edward Norton as the Hulk until Endgame, what was your favorite movie in there? What one do you think added to the storyline the best?
Well, that's a tough one. I had to look him up real quick so I'm not missing any.
Do you have a favorite superhero in that Marvel universe?
I like all the Thor movies. I thought like Thor Ragnarok was pretty good. But I don't know, probably Infinity War was like one of the best ones, I thought, because it just, everybody's there, and I don't know.
Yeah, but no, Thor, absolutely.
Yeah.
Ragnarok I had a problem with. I did not like the whole the Hulk as a champion, Jeff Goldblum, that weird planet whole storyline. I hated it, hated it, hated it. But I loved the other storyline of his sister coming back, and she was really good. And that whole storyline. So it's like I love and hate the movie at the same time.
It was a little weird, but I thought it was one of the funnier ones too. I thought the Thor movies are kind of funny and entertaining and tell a good story. I think that's why I like the Thor ones, where like Captain America is a little more serious, or like some of those other ones are a little serious, where you get to just hang out and watch Thor, and he's kind of funny.
That's probably why he is going to be with the Guardians of the Galaxy. They probably work well together with that whole lighter hearted stuff.
Yeah, those are funny too.
Absolutely. On the Netflix, do you have something you've watched and finished recently that you can tell people about that they should go watch it?
I don't think I haven't really been on Netflix that much recently. Mostly just a little Hulu or a little YouTube stuff. I don't know. I haven't really been on Netflix that much.
I have found myself not going on Netflix as much as I used to. I think I'm doing Ozark on Netflix right now.
Yeah, I started the new season, and I couldn't really get into it. So I might have to wait till the other season's on and just try to binge. But.
Yeah, I think I'm about four episodes in on this latest thing. I'm all wrapped up in The Walking Dead right now because it's the last season, and I have an emotional attachment to the show.
Yeah, I have all the newest season on my DVR, and as much as I like The Walking Dead, lately it's been so boring that I have trouble watching like this new season and getting into it. But I have like 8 episodes on my DVR that I need to watch at some point.
I don't mind most of what they've done. I'm one of those Walking Dead apologists. So I would talk to you and try to talk you into how everything has been so great. But they got this new thing, and this is where the show is going to end, is with this Commonwealth place, which is the biggest biggest camp. It's supposed to be like in Ohio in the comic books, and there's thousands and thousands of people that are there. And that's where the storyline is going to come to an end. So as they're moving over to that storyline, I mean, the episode I watched last night was boring. It was so boring. I was like, wow. I know they got to switch storylines and build, but damn, can something happen? And just something happened in this episode? It's just bad. It's bad. It's one of the worst things I will tell you about the Commonwealth is it's just trying to be a normal society. So it just feels like a city. Okay. And, it was Halloween, So they made a haunted house that had zombies in it, and the kids would go through the haunted house and not real zombies, just the parents and everything dressed up like zombies would jump out of the doorways at the kids as they went through. And that was their haunted house. And I'm like, that's goddamn ridiculous. There's no way they'd be doing that.
No, I don't know. I don't know if I can watch any more of that after that. I don't know. Well, maybe I'll try it, but when I get to that episode, I might have to fast forward to it.
Hey, you recently went to your first hockey game. How much hockey have you watched before you went to your first hockey game?
I don't really watch that much hockey. I mean, if it's on, I'll watch it. I don't mind watching playoff hockey, but hockey's not a sport I really ever gravitated towards. But yeah, my buddy has season tickets, and he asked me to go, and I was like, yeah, absolutely. Why not? I've never been to one. He has pretty good seats, so I had a good time.
Something you learned about hockey at the game that you have a little more respect for?
Anything? I don't think I really learned anything, but
how many beers did you have at the game, Chris?
I really only had one. I only had one. I had to drive home after that from Boston to where I live, which is about a half hour away. So I wasn't trying to get too crazy. My buddy who was there, who lives a lot closer to Boston, drank a little bit more than I did.
Hey, during my research of you, I came across a cousin of yours. Her name is Maeve Kendrick. Does that name ring a bell?
Yeah.
So I contacted Maeve, as I contact some people, and I said, can you tell me a funny story? Is there an embarrassing moment? You got to give me something on Chris. And her answer, and you'll be happy with this answer, and she just messaged me to see if she missed the podcast. Her answer was that she doesn't have any dirt on you at all as far as an embarrassing story. She actually said that you've been an exceptional role model.
Well, thank you, Maeve. No, if you wanted an embarrassing story, you should have got my brother. Some good stories, I'm sure.
I don't want to ask your brother. I want to ask you. What's the story? Give me a story.
This is a pretty embarrassing story. I'll tell an embarrassing story.
All right.
So 2004, the Red Sox won the World Series. They had the parade. But the night before, me and my buddy we're sitting around drinking. We're having some Guinness with a little bit of Bailey's in it. But because I was young and dumb, I didn't chug that. So I started to curdle a little bit. I still drank a little bit of it, whatever. I went to bed, woke up early to go to the parade. So I'm with my buddy, my brother, and his friend. We're driving down. We stop at Dunkin' Donuts. Get a sandwich. All of a sudden, my stomach's a little like, ooh, I gotta puke. So I take the sandwich out of the bag, and I puke in the bag, like thinking that's a smart idea. It held the puke for a minute, and then I move it, and the bag exploded, and I have curdled Bailey's and vomit all over my pants. So we have to stop somewhere else so I can go clean it off. I'm walking around Boston smelling like vomit. My brother and his friends are buying air fresheners to spray me down. The nice part of this story is I got close enough to give David Ortiz a high five as he passed us on the parade. He didn't want to be near me because I smelled so bad. So I got fresheners. So that's an embarrassing story, I would say.
I don't know. When you're celebrating a World Series championship, all bets are off, right? Like, nobody's going to give you grief for that story, Chris.
No, I mean, yeah. But still, it's a pretty embarrassing story. Like, you puke on yourself at, like, 8 in the morning or 7 in the morning, whatever time it was. And then you got to deal with that for the next 12 hours.
how that story becomes embarrassing is I went to a Tuesday night game. It was the Red Sox against the Minnesota Twins, and the game meant nothing. The Twins were 15 games behind in the Central, and the Red Sox, they had already clinched a playoff spot. And the Twins beat us 8-1, and I got wasted out of my mind, and I threw up in a bag.
See, throwing up in the bag was an idea. Obviously, it wasn't. I just fell over, but, you know, I think I was 18 or 19 at the time, so I was kind of dumb.
That reminds me of a story. we're going to tell throw-up stories. I'm not going to tell one about myself, but in my youth, I was a DJ, and I was DJing at something called a Walleye Festival, and there I was inside the bar playing some dance music, and there was a guy that I knew sitting there, and he was drunk. He was out of his mind drunk, but he's just sitting there on a stool, and he's just doing the rock, you know, back and forth, the rock. And I look over to him because it looks like he's going to fall asleep. His eyes are just down, and he's doing the rock. And then he perks his head up, and he looks around, and then he threw up in his bottle. He threw up in the bottle, and so then he looks around, and he says, all right, nobody saw that. So then he drank out of the bottle again, Chris. That's how drunk he was. He forgot. He just threw up in the bottle.
That makes me want to throw up right now.
Yeah. Ooh. Don't you hear? Yeah. That's what I had in my throat. You know that. It's in there. Oh, God. That was a bad situation. All right. Hey, Chris, once again, thanks for being on the show. We're going to end with the segment I always end with, as you know, of your many listenings of the two episodes. It is giving you the old pepper. I am about to pepper you with some random questions, and you are going to answer them. It's just that easy. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
When Thanos snapped his fingers, who are you the most upset about disappearing?
Black Panther.
What is the sexiest animal? Don't tell me you don't think about animals a lot, Chris.
I don't. You're gonna be right.
Okay, do not name the sexiest animal. Just name a sexy animal.
Leopard.
What is your favorite color of socks?
Black.
Name an overrated Major League Baseball player from any era you want.
Ooh. Bryce Harper.
Oh, jeez. You're gonna get letters. That name always comes up in that.
Because he's a little overrated. So I'm not the only one saying it. He's a little whatever. All right. I don't want more letters.
You're gonna get them. What was your first job?
I think I was 16 or 17. I worked at a batting cage.
What is your favorite country other than the United States?
Ireland.
What is the best color for ink in pens?
Blue.
What is your favorite craft beer?
The one that's in my hand.
What is your favorite movie of all time?
Oof.
Come on, don't you hold one on me and try. Don't be trying to be like, I got to think of something more manly than that. I can't tell him that. If it's Titanic, Chris, just say it. It's a love story. I
mean, that's top five, for sure. Home Alone actually is my favorite movie.
See, there you go. Nothing wrong with that. No one's going to make fun of that. Yeah. Who is not in the Hall of Fame that you believe should be in the Hall of Fame?
Barry Bonds is an easy one right now. He should definitely be in the Hall of Fame.
When you're playing a game of paper, rock, scissors, which one would you say you go with the most?
Rock.
Name a pet peeve. Come on, you got like 10 million things that bother you in a day. We all do. Give me one.
If I don't, like, if I can't keep my routine, I get very angry.
Oh, so you're a very organized, almost anal guy about the way it's just got to be.
Like my morning, if something in my morning routine is thrown off, it takes me a little while to recover, I guess.
Chris, name your favorite professional wrestler when you were growing up.
Growing up, Ultimate Warrior.
All right, that's bullshit. The answer is John Cena. Chris,
I didn't even watch wrestling when it was done. I watched through like the 90s and early 2000s. Baby. He wasn't even around yet.
The Ultimate Warrior. Yeah, the good old days. This was when he was at the height of his Hulk Hogan feuds, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of people like the Ultimate Warrior. Chris, thanks for being on the show, bro.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
It was a good time, and now everybody out in the vintage baseball community knows a little bit more about you and knows more about the Essex Baseball Club and knows that you're going to be home tonight watching Pam and Tommy.
No, Wednesday I watch. It's not out yet.
Oh, it's in episodes? I thought it was just a one-shot deal.
I wish it was. That would have already been done, but it's only once a week, so tough.
All right. Well, Chris, anything else you want to tell the vintage baseball world before we say goodbye?
No, thanks for having me. And if you guys want to come up to the farm in Newberry, just reach out to us and we can try to make that happen. But, again, thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have beer at your home game, so you might get a call. Just saying.
Maybe.
All right, Chris, you have a good night. You stay, on the line for me so I can say goodbye to you. Like a gentleman would.
All right.
And everybody out there, thanks for listening again. Next week, episode 4 of season 3 is going to be Bobby Murkowski of the Greenfield Village La-Di-Da's. I get to grill him while he's on the stand this time. Good night, everybody.